For the latest Transformer news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com. You're watching Radio Free Cybertron with your hosts, Brian Kilby, J.D. Church, Rob Springer, John DeLuna, Lady Wreck, Bweebum, featuring XV.
Okay, so this week we are not featuring XV. XV is not here. XV did not see Dark of the Moon, but we did.
Oh.
Fail.
Yeah, fail.
Fail.
So this week we are totally spoiling Dark of the Moon. So right now I'm engaging the Dark of the Moon spoiler icon at the top of the screen, the banner, I would say. Banner. So from this point on, you've been warned. So people watching listening to the podcast, we have a little banner at the top of the screen in bright red that says Dark of the Moon spoilers, because this week we all saw Dark of the Moon. And who are we? I'm Brian Kilby, your prodigal host, who is now back.
Your occasional host.
He has returned again.
Yes, and John DeLuna is here. Chris Triplett from Fanboy Versus, the other Chris, the one that was
Hello.
In my wedding.
The lesser Chris.
No.
Tony and JD. Hey, Tony, thank you for being on this week.
No worries. Always a pleasure.
Great, yes. So, Dark of the Moon, we're actually not covering news. We're not covering anything else.
This is it.
This is
all we are talking about is Dark of the Moon.
There is no news.
The big news. Dark of the Moon is the big news of the year, and no surprise, you know, there. I mean, the movie is always the big news, but the surprise is it was good.
It was good.
Who saw that coming?
Very good. Surprisingly really good.
Yeah. Surprisingly good.
I mean, it's not like Citizen Kane. I mean, it's not, if you have like
it's not
something I would take my in-laws to, you know, if they're like if they're like film snobs. But in context of the other movies, it's easily the best, and it's thoroughly enjoyable.
I just want to say this right now: nobody peed on anybody or anything.
No, oh my God, you're right. I just realized that.
Nobody peed on anybody or anything.
And for that, I was so grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's only so much robot pee and dogs shagging each other. And yes, none of that, thank God.
Things like that. Yep. No.
I mean, there are some things to nitpick in the movie, but nothing that really ruins it. I mean, God, there's so many things that happened in Revenge of the Fallen that just totally ruined the movie for me. But this?
Yeah. I mean, this is a good movie with some flaws or some weird moments, but Dark of the Moon was just bad, like up and down.
Okay, this
Revenge of the Fallen, you mean?
Yeah, Revenge of the Fallen was just a horrible movie.
Don't get them confused.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean,
yeah, they couldn't be more different.
All five of us are in accord. We all agree that it was good and that you should see it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's telling. That's telling. Okay, I guess we should sort of... Spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
We're starting to talk about the movie. So the movie started off in the 1960s.
I must admit, that was very, very well done. I loved that whole sequence.
It was. So we found out that observers from Earth spotted an impact on the moon, and they did some observing through a telescope and saw that there was something going on up there. And they alerted the president, who... Kennedy announced that the United States was going to, in his famous To the Moon speech, they were going to land a man on the moon. It was all because that something landed and they wanted to see what it was. The whole first, what, 5 minutes, 7-8 minutes of the film was just, notice I actually said film. Was basically the exposition of the race to the moon to figure out what's up there, using actually archival footage of Kennedy and Nixon and everyone, and Walter Cronkite, basically weaving this whole semi-plausible in context concept that there's something out there, and you know that's what we're going to the moon for. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it was
a little cheesy, but I mean they pulled it off really well. I mean, considering with what we're working with here,
and they established right off that that it was the Ark. I mean, they established that with from the Cybertron shot. I mean, we open again with a with very similar to the first film. We open with a monologue from Optimus. So, I mean, I thought that was a nice establishing item that we didn't have from the second film, really.
Yeah. So, Tony, you were about to say something?
Yeah, the whole sequence, very well done, but it also felt like a montage of, like, just, like, jumps every few minutes of like, every few hours kind of thing leading up to the moon landing. I just thought that was really well done. The way it was executed was fantastic.
John.
And, but that whole sequence, though, that was my favorite bit in the whole film, was that first few minutes.
It was really good. John, what were you about to say?
I don't remember, but I will say that the sequence was really good because it, you know, I mean, it's the conspiracy theory idea obviously isn't like a new idea, but it was really done well here. It also kind of helped, I guess, ground them in more of like our history and our world. So it wasn't like a completely detached story. So I thought it was an interesting way of kind of weaving.
It grounded the Transformers.
Yeah, so it kind of made it almost a smaller story, but like more familiar. It wasn't just like this completely out there sci-fi plot this time around.
Why didn't we get something like that in the first movie?
Yeah. I don't know. This would have been an awesome origin first movie with some tweaks, obviously, but it felt like that. You know, it was paced a lot like that.
Yeah, because the first movie just opens and they're just here already. There's no explanation why they're here or anything like that. This one kind of like makes up for that.
So basically that all of that played out in the first few minutes of the film, and we cut to modern day. And the first shot was a shot of Bag of Hangers behind.
Well, before we get to that, just real quick, what did you guys think about that shot of Cybertron and the wars and stuff? I thought that was pretty cool looking.
In 3D especially, that was great.
In 3D, it was really pretty amazing.
The 3D was fantastic. I'm the biggest opponent of 3D. I thought you should die and everything like that, but this movie really sort of opened my eyes.
Did a great job
of
the 3D.
Yeah.
Did we see the most of Cybertron we've seen in any of the movies?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a lot.
By the end of the film, certainly. We got a really good feel for it.
Yeah, and it was. I think. It was certainly on par, at least if not just slightly more than the first. But I think it was. I think it was a little bit more. I think we got more of an idea of like Cybertronian tech as far as ships and things like that.
Sentinel Prime was escaping a Decepticon attack, and basically he was launched from Cybertron and landed millions of years later on Earth's moon.
In the Ark.
But
nice little touch. I mean, because like we didn't get that traditional Transformers origin in the first movie, and we get like a nice little nod to it in this one. I really like that.
But as great as this was, I was really enthralled in the first 7 minutes. I'm like, wow, this is great. I love this. This is something different. Next shot, Rosie Huntington Whiteley's butt, and I'm like, oh,
yes.
I was deflated. I'm like, oh, we're going back in this direction.
I know, it was like, oh, this sounds familiar.
I'm not gonna knock this, but when I saw that, I was like, Revenge of the Fallen 2 just started.
Yeah, Revenge of the Fallen is being brought back.
Yeah, I thought as well.
So basically, in this scene, the next scene, they were in sort of bed. He was in bed, and she joined him. Sam, basically, it established that Michaela had dumped Sam at some point in the past, and that Sam had a new girlfriend. So instead of trying to force this relationship in the course of the film, they had already established that it was in place before the movie started, which I thought was great, because who wants to go through that boy has to get girl story again?
I thought they did a great job actually of establishing it, like, you know, the beginnings of it in a very plausible sort of way, because they showed that sequence where he got like the Medal of Honor from Obama. and I mean, really established how he sort of, you know, kind of won this girl's heart just by kind of being
an idiot,
you know, kind of a really so I thought that was I have that question of like, wait a minute, how does this sort of loser guy end up with a hot girl again? And it's like, well, because he just happened to be in the right place at the right time again.
Yes.
And there you-
Well, the good thing about that is it's, the whole thing was just explained in like two or three sentences, which is all you needed, instead of just being like a huge chunk of dialogue of what happened next.
Because that was the big thrust of the first movie, was just him landing Michaela. And, you know, we didn't have to go through that again.
Sure.
And I have to say, Bag of Hangers is as good an actress as Megan Fox.
Yeah. Okay, I'll argue she's a little bit better.
I thought she was better.
Yeah.
No, I thought she was
I was going to say, the only problem I've got with her English accent sounds really, really, really fake.
But why would she have an English accent?
I mean, I don't know why they would bother.
Yeah, it sounds really fake.
She kind of was Australian or something, wasn't she?
What was that?
She's
English or something.
Yeah, she's European, but I don't know what she is. But
see, that kind of ruined it a little bit for me. Because being a British native, it sounded really fake.
Hmm. There you go, people.
Yes, there you go. But I did not hate her. She was actually very likable. So I take back all of the terrible things that I have said about her.
Yeah,
except she was, though. She was. She seemed a little more on screen.
So who knew a bag of Hainer could act her way out of a bag?
Yes, she acted her way out of a bag. So at that point, it established that Sam didn't have a job, that he was looking for a job to basically satisfy his parents because he just got out of school. And I guess the big thing that happened is he actually, there was a neat little scene where a montage of him doing interviews, and basically in Sam Witwicky fashion made jokes and things and was funny, ha ha ha. And he landed
his character worked in that scene.
Yes,
like it wasn't cloying. It was actually a really good scene.
Yeah, so he landed at this really, really awful looking corporation, and who else was he interviewing with but Chris?
John Malkovich,
who was awesome. He was perfect in this role. He played this basically this insane director executive of this company. He was OCD about things such as color and the like, and Sam just decided in the course of this, hey, I've been someone, I have done important things in the past. I don't want a menial job. I want to be someone again. And that's really the whole thrust of the movie, is that he wants to prove to himself and everyone else that he matters. But because of the way he feels and the way he interacts with Malkovich, what was the name of the character?
Oh, I can't even remember now.
No, I can't remember either.
Basically, he says, screw this, I don't want this job. I'm better than this, and Malkovich says, well, you remind me of me. You don't want this job, you want the job after it, but you gotta go through this one first, you're hired. And it's because...
Isn't the mailroom job his after?
It's a mailroom job.
Yeah.
And
basically, he has a recommendation from someone on the board, and later on we find out that it's Patrick Dempsey, who's a douche in this film, so...
Yeah!
He was really good, too.
He was really good, but he was a douche.
Yeah, it was a different character for him.
Yes, it totally was. So
he's really good at making me want to hate him.
He really was.
Rosie is English.
She is English?
She's English.
So she has a fake English accent, and she is English.
She did. Well, it just seemed fake to me, anyway.
Well, more stuff happens. The Autobots find out that... the humans have known about the Transformers. Was that actually John Glenn that showed up in the film? That was John Glenn, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin.
It was Buzz Aldrin, not John Glenn. Or was John Glenn there too, and I just missed it? It was Buzz Aldrin. So basically, a lot of things happened. The Autobots found out that the humans knew about this. The humans said, you know, only a few people knew. It was top secret. So Buzz Aldrin showed up, and some people that were supposedly NASA directors explaining the course of events that led to the discovery of the Ark.
Which, and that'll come to like my first point, which is a little bit of a complaint about the film, which was that it had some parts that were a little bit long, and that's one of those points that it's like, it's so cool that it's easy to overlook, but really, from a film standpoint, they didn't really add anything to the story. They told the Autobots things that we already knew. So other than the coolness factor, I don't know that it really added anything to the overall experience for the viewer.
I agree with that totally. Totally agree with that. But as a Transformers film, that's a minor nitpick. It's kind of like I forgot who it was. It might have been Dak who had mentioned in the things that he learned in Transformers 2 was that from the Smithsonian there's a door to Arizona.
Right.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
God,
that's such an awful movie. But it, again, you know, it further grounds the Transformers being in our world. Also, later on or slightly earlier, I can't remember which in the film. I'm using that a little bit loosely. It's a popcorn flick, but it's a good one. We find out that the Russians had also intercepted Transformers technology and had tried to use it as fissionable material at Chernobyl. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh, fancy.
Yes.
Again, you know what? Again, that's like history that's... Okay, so like in Revenge of the Fallen, they tied in with ancient Egypt. That is so abstract.
It's exactly.
Yeah.
I cannot relate to that at all, but all this, you know, 60s-ish... your parents and their parents' Switch. Generation type stuff. That's way more relatable. And, you know, it does what the second movie tried to do, only it works this time.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing about this movie is you can completely disregard Revenge of the Fallen and watch the first one and the last one, and you still get a complete story.
I agree, except for Megatron being alive in this film. And I had honestly forgotten. So in this film, in this movie, we see Megatron, who is awesome. Because basically I think Triplett pointed out, he plays kind of like this sort of redneck sort of robot that's out in the backwoods feeding his dogs.
Yeah.
So
he feeds his dogs.
It's not dogs, but it's robotic pets.
Decepticon spawnlings make another appearance because that's what he's like feeding is those little spawnlings. There were a lot of critter Transformers in this film. I mean, in particular, did you even mention you know, like Wheelie and Brains? I mean, because they made their appearance.
Wheelie was awesome in this. Yeah. Brains was
I loved Wheelie and Brains. They were hilarious.
They were awesome.
I like Brains.
I think Wheelie worked a lot better when he had a buddy next to him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think when they had, you know, a friend to play off of, that kind of character, the little guy, really works a heck of a lot better than just being alone and making cracks at people.
Yeah. So is Wheelie and Brains, are they the better Skids and Mudflap?
Yes.
The Skids and Mudflap that didn't work, that now work?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the Skids and Mudflap that should have been.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't talk street, and that was a big, big, big thing for me. Because the Skids and Mudflap, I was like, oh, no, where are you going? No.
And it actually helps that they were tiny and kind of, for the most part, ineffectual. Because with
the twins
in the second movie, they had to fight. We had to, wait, you know, give them their moments. But these guys were kind of out of the way. They would make their jokes, be funny, and then go away for the most part.
Yeah.
Most part.
And then in the end, they like totally redeemed that.
Yeah. So, you know, they turned it around. But we didn't have to, like, I guess, suffer through them being involved in every scene in every way. So,
I mentioned it's Skids and Mudflap. They're not in the movie, so I guess Michael Bay doesn't owe us any money.
He doesn't owe anyone $25,000.
Nope.
So, so Megatron is basically this beat-up truck. And, of course, he has a head injury, which is resulted from the end of Revenge of the Fallen. And so he drives around with this tarp. And when he transforms into robot mode, he has the cloak that obscures the injury. And when you see him speak, again, JD mentions how there's all these little creepy crawly critters in this movie. So the creepy crawly little Transformers critters are all over him, and he's like parasites killing them. And some of them are actually trying to fix him.
He's really cool looking. I like the look on him.
He is really cool looking.
Yeah.
And
it's a unique look. Something. I mean, just all the stuff crawling all over him, the rust all. I mean, it's amazing how detailed he is.
And if you compare Megatron from basically his journey from the first movie, when he's like this all powerful, you know, almost Transformers deity that everyone's afraid of, to the second movie where he's the Fallen's little bitch. In this movie, he's again basically Sentinel Prime's bitch. Spoilers. We're getting there. We're getting there. You know, but he's far more relatable in this film, and he's kind of likable.
I like the character a lot in the movie.
I'll tell you what I did like, though.
What, John?
Well, I mean, he's really, you can understand his motivations and where he is in life, so to speak. And so, you kind of feel for him almost, you know?
So what was the next big plot point that popped up?
Laser
beam.
Yes. So basically, Megatron at this point had got all the information that he needed, so he told Soundwave, he directed Soundwave and Laserbeak to basically clean up. So the humans that they had been operating with basically were to be executed. So, which was a really neat little couple of scenes where Laserbeak was going and killing people.
I did like the look of Laserbeak a hell of a lot.
I liked it a lot. I liked Laserbeak a lot better than I expected, honestly.
And we got introduced to Shockwave earlier too, because that happened at that Chernobyl sequence.
At Chernobyl.
So yes, yeah. Shockwave
and his friend,
and his,
I guess.
Giant.
Yeah, that weird beast.
Yeah, his pet.
Giant robotic worm.
Yeah, his giant sandworm.
His giant sandworm. Yeah.
His giant robotic sandworm.
Graboid.
So one of the humans that the Decepticons were in league with actually works conveniently at Sam's firm, and the human recognizes Sam and gives him information, which, you know, he knows that the Decepticons are after him, then he has to do something. So he gives Sam the information. The guy is just in this really funny and kind of terrible scene. Laserbeak mercilessly pushes him through a window, and he falls probably 30 stories to his death. And then they describe it in this sort of gruesome fashion. It's like, well, he's in the bistro, he's in the bushes, he's, you know, all over the place.
Oh my god.
Kind of
John Malkovich was just great in this movie.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, he's like looking at him, won't bring him back to get back to work.
He was the he got more scenes, but he was kind of like the Bernie Mac of this film.
Yeah, he was.
Your Bernie Mac was the good character from the first movie, the character that you remembered. He's the character that you remembered from this film. But yeah, so basically from this point, Sam decides, hey, I've got to get in touch with the Autobots. And again, it goes back to the whole, you know, I'm someone who matters sort of struggle that Sam has to deal with. Sam drives his beat up Datsun that looks like Bumblebee to the Health and Human Services, I think it was, office. Go ahead, Jamie.
Did they go pick up Sentinel yet? Because they, well, because Optimus and
Yes. So, Ratchet. So in this little ship that I didn't know they had, they fly into space, look at the Ark, pick up Sentinel, and these sort of canister tank pillar things that we later find out are parts of a space bridge.
Which Sentinel designed
because he is the Einstein of the Transformers and the former leader. Yeah. Of course, he's a Prime, so he has to be something.
Mm.
So, yeah, Sam goes to the Health and Human Services branch, which is actually the Nest or what branch of the government is this supposed to be?
I think it's still Nest, isn't it?
I guess so.
I think the Nest
compound, and the people there are like, you're nobody, leave us alone. This is Health and Human Services. Basically, Sam tries to fight his way in. His Datsun is destroyed in this funny little scene. And Bumblebee comes out and basically escorts him in. And basically no one pays Sam any attention because he's just some kid who is in the right place at the right time, again, just devastating his ego. But, you know, he through the whole movie, he really perseveres, and he really is just – he knows that there's more to him than just being a lucky kid. And, again, that's the theme of the movie. I'm more than just a lucky kid. I am someone who has saved the world. I am someone who is important.
A messenger. Yeah, because they kept calling him a messenger.
Yeah. Really interesting. So go ahead.
That's what was missing from Revenge of the Fallen. It wasn't about – it was just – like the first one, it's about the boy in his car. This one, it's about, like, the world's passing him by and I'm important, but nobody seems to see it yet. And the second one just didn't have
any
of that.
Just a bunch of random crap on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if the movies are really about Sam. They're not about the Transformers. I mean, I think that's really what you know, that you really sort of have to understand watching these. And if there's no growth or no story or no challenge that Sam has to undergo, I mean, the movies kind of lose like their oomph. They kind of lose their, they're not really interesting or engaging. And we're the first movie again. It's a story about a boy in his car trying to get a girl. This movie is about a man who knows that, you know, it's the story everyone lives. Everyone thinks in their dreams are a hero. But, you know, few people actually are. We live our boring lives. We do our boring jobs. Mm. And, you know, Sam has been someone who's done more. We all want to look back at the glory days, but he actually achieves it. So, well, again, what was the next plot point?
It was the reviving of Sentinel.
Well, yeah, and Sentinel, I think they had established by this point that the pillar things were space bridge technology. And that the whole reason that Sentinel had left was to go somewhere else and establish a space bridge so that they could move resources back to Cybertron or something along those lines. And mm-hmm. that there had originally been hundreds of these pillars, but at this point they only had five.
Yes, so...
The control pillar and, like, four others.
Yes, so basically at this point we is when... Sam kind of has Agent Fowler. Not Agent Fowler. It's
No. At this point, Sam figures out that he goes back. He goes to Simmons.
Agent Simmons. I'm getting my Prime and my Transformers.
The people are getting killed. But that's before I think he goes to. Isn't that before he goes to? Oh no, he does. You're right. He goes to Nest, and they tell him to get out because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yes. Then that's when he goes to get.
Then
to
there's
talk
a scene
to
where Simmons is on the O'Reilly Factor, and again another douchebag in this film, Bill O'Reilly. Man loves a dollar. Yeah. Sorry, I had to say that. But there's an interesting scene where he basically says that Simmons is a crank, and you shouldn't buy his book. And Simmons basically, you know, he's just trying. He just comes off something like a shyster, wanting to, you know, just sell his stuff. But Sam calls up Simmons, explains to Simmons that there's crazy crap going on. Simmons, like a junkie, you know, wants to jump back in and do this. And that's really what they play this off as, is he's like an adrenaline junkie who like gets off on this giant robot crap.
Yeah, like Sam says, I got some information that I bet you didn't ever know about, and then he can't stand it. He has to know. He has to get back in.
Well, and then it's at this point as well that we're introduced to his assistant.
Oh my god!
Which is played by Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk. Wash Firefly
was awesome.
Oh my god. Steve, oh my god, this character was amazing.
He played this sort of whacked out, crazy mercenary personal assistant.
German special forces, probably, or something. Yeah.
he was like Simmons special. The scene when they're in the bar and there's the Mexican standoff.
God, amazing. He just has this whole like Jason Bourne moment where he just like. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, that's not me anymore.
Yeah, so basically Simmons and Sam go to this bar to find these cosmonauts. Because the question is, you know, why did we quit going to the moon? You know, we mm-hmm. went to the moon several times. 1972, we quit going. Why? So the question is posed, well, the Russians were going to go, but they were convinced not to. For some reason. So they look for these cosmonauts who now are living in the United States and press them for information. Again, they go to the bar to find them. Simmons tries to speak to them in Russian and fails miserably. And they're like, "You speak English? You know, what's the point?"
Das Vidanya. That means goodbye.
But yeah, so really, really good scene. What was the name of the character, the assistant? I can't remember.
God, I can't remember.
I should have this pulled up.
Either.
Doesn't matter.
These characters are more memorable than they are for their names, for what they did, right. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, know? But they have this Mexican standoff, and he basically pulls a shotgun from someone and basically holds a gun on a couple of people. They basically all decide to stop, and they give them information. We find out that there were hundreds and hundreds of those pillars that we had referenced earlier that were spotted from a satellite, I guess, Lunar 4 that...
It was spotted on the Lunar 3 lander and then the Lunar... Oh, no, the Lunar 3 lander was the one that didn't see anything, and then Lunar 4...
Lunar 2 that didn't see anything, Lunar 4, they... so basically... they spotted that, so it's like, holy crap, something's going on. Sam puts two and two together. The Decepticons want Sentinel Prime because he's the only Autobot that can actually activate the space bridge.
Yeah. Sam, the only one, I think, period.
The only one, period. Sam contacts the director of the, she was the National Defense.
Special Defense or something like that,
Director.
This was Francis McDormand.
Yes. Her name? I mean, that's the amazing thing is, like, there's a lot of, like, Oscar and Tony winning actors in this film. I mean,
yes.
she won an Oscar for Fargo. She just won a Tony.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That's who that is. I know I recognize her.
Fargo.
Yeah, Fargo's fantastic.
And I think John Malkovich has an Oscar. Some great actors in this film. Screw what Ebert said, talking about cardboard characters. They're like, these are Oscar and Tony winning actors. Screw you.
Probably, and again, if you haven't watched this film, stop watching right now, because the spoiler of the movie.
Major
spoiler.
Is coming now.
This is the most awesome thing.
No return here, people.
So basically what happens next is Sam gets Sentinel Prime, the Autobots together. They go to a secret compound, and Sentinel Prime just goes batshit crazy and starts shooting the Autobots. Basically, he had made an agreement with Megatron that to save Cybertron, they have to work together, and he kills Ironhide.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! I thought my wife was going to have a breakdown. She loves Ironhide.
I do too. Ironhide's great.
Yeah. Ironhide's awesome.
He was one of the first Transformers that we saw in the first movie, and he's been there all the way through. And he just he shoots him several times, turns to dust.
I'll tell you what though, the reveal that Sentinel Prime was just a 10 cut just came out of nowhere. What the hell?
Yeah, Optimus had offered to give him the Matrix back. I'm glad he didn't. Glad he didn't take it.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because Sentinel actually refused it. I mean, he gave it to Sentinel, and Sentinel refused it.
Yeah.
So you kind of, I don't think it's a plot hole. I just think it's an interesting character point for Sentinel, because I think it proves that Sentinel really thought that he was doing what he thought was right. Yeah, and the Prime would see it his way.
I have to say, if he's really the Einstein of the Transformers, you know, I recently went through this thing where they were talking about, this psychology test thing where they're talking about how smart people often have strange opinions or convoluted ideas of right and wrong. And that really comes across. I mean, he thinks he's doing the best for the Transformers as a race, as a species, by joining sides with Megatron. He's a true believer of that.
He's doing the right thing for the wrong reason.
Right. He's the right thing for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Or the wrong reason
and
for the right
reason.
I totally
that too. Like, or they do a good job of dialogue to explain himself several times.
Yeah.
I totally thought Sentinel was just going to be a throwaway character, too. I mean, I did not expect this amount of depth. I thought, well, this is just another toy that's going to be in there, but no.
No. Yeah, he was... It was one of those deals where it's just like, wow. I mean, that not seen kind of left field and really tears some crap up. I mean,
yes.
He's a good dude, but man, he was...
Well, they established how tough he was when they revived him, right? And he immediately immobilized Optimus Prime.
Yeah, he took Prime down.
Yeah. So they kind of established him as like a physical threat right away, if he wanted to be. And he wanted
to be. Something else that we needed from the second movie was the Matrix of Leadership, because that was the whole deal. They couldn't they couldn't wake Sentinel up until they had the Matrix of Leadership.
Exactly.
And so here's a brilliant thing that this script did. It went through the first and second films and took pieces out of them to make them make sense, even the things that didn't make sense.
Yes.
But to make them make sense in a way that made this film work.
Yes, absolutely. We had to have the first and second movie in place, or at least the events that happened in the first and second movie for this one to work, for this plot to work. The Decepticons wanted Sentinel Prime alive, they wanted him functioning, and they had to have the matrix of leadership in place for this to happen. Great stuff.
And this was, and it wasn't the original plan. Because later, like right after this, is the sequence where Sentinel meets up with Megatron, and you find out that this whole for them to team up had been established and around for a while, and that both of them had planned a rendezvous on Earth.
Yes.
But Megatron had gotten waylaid when he crashed, and then Sentinel got waylaid when his ship got shot up.
Yes.
So they ended up meeting up later.
Much later.
But this was ultimately...
And that's really cool.
Yeah,
I really like that. Yeah, I mean, just all these things that just go back to that first movie, and it's just awesome.
The movie is very fast-paced. Very, very fast-paced. But at this point, the movie goes into ridiculous overdrive. It's the definition of an adrenaline rush. So basically, I guess to skip ahead a little bit, Megatron and Sentinel meet in Washington, D.C. at the Lincoln Memorial. The Lincoln Memorial, and he sets down on
That's
Lincoln's
another
chair.
Reference to the G1 cartoon. Yeah. I think it is Rise of Atlantis, that one. Where they're in Washington.
Yeah, there's one of those.
Yeah.
So basically,
I was squeed at that point. I was like, finally.
I did too. I cringed. I'm like, it's like, oh wow, that hurts. But then Sentinel basically turned on, engaged a couple of the pillars for the space bridge, and a bunch of Decepticons come from the moon and cause a lot
of
crap.
That sequence in 3D was fantastic.
It was.
And they're all popping up out the dust, and all the little flakes of dust passing by the screen.
Yeah,
that was done exceptionally well.
And
well done.
I know Peter will listen to this after. Screw you, IMAX 3D was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was
pretty good.
I love you, Peter. IMAX 3D was awesome.
Yeah,
I will take back all the things I've said of 3D the last few years for this film. Honestly,
well, loved it. This is 3D done right, because in a lot of ways you almost didn't notice it, but it was filmed in natural 3D, it was meant to be viewed this way, as opposed to like a lot of other films that are forced to be 3D. And it's not that they just don't look cool, but it was natural for this film.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just like the little things, like the flecks of dust and the sparks and explosions, and the smoke drifting past the screen. It's little things like that. That's when it was fantastic.
So I guess basically the Decepticons are invading Earth. They end up going to...
Do they invade Earth? Holy shit.
Yeah, and I think things, in movies, cities are destroyed, but it's always a place that, you've never been, or a place you've never really conceived of. I've been in Chicago. I've walked the streets of Chicago. Being there really sort of helped. It's like, wow, that's really kind of crazy. The Decepticons annihilated Chicago. And this was the most violent film of the series.
Right. Well, there's one point before this, which is like after the invasion into D.C., is when
Optimus confronts Megatron. I mean,
the banishment happened. So the
Autobots are banished because the Decepticons. Sentinel Prime tells the United Nations that to cooperate, they need to banish the Transformers, the Autobots. They get on the shuttle that the second wave of, which is a nice little reference because we had no idea how they got there, but there was a ship when the second wave of Autobots came in. They sent it back up, and Starscream shot it down, and it exploded, and we assume that the Transformers are dead.
But before that, we finally meet the Wreckers.
Wreckers!
This is an important point. Now, let's establish that up until this point, everything that we saw of the Wreckers was like ball caps and sunglasses and NASCAR, and there wasn't a damn one of us that didn't go, oh, they're going to be rednecks.
Yep.
And then they get on the screen and they start talking, and I like peed.
Yeah,
it was like,
so did I.
Yes. English.
It's, I'll let one of you guys say the next bit what she says about them.
They're assholes.
That was brilliant. That was awesome.
Yes. So
we don't let these guys out too much. Why not?
Because Leadfoot, Leadfoot, right? The target car. He has a ginormous beer belly.
Yeah.
Ginormous beer belly.
Kind of look like me.
Robuster has his ball cap.
And Topspin has his mullet.
It's his mullet. I love him so much.
Oh my god. And Topspin didn't talk very much. I mean, Robuster and Leadfoot did, but oh man. And they were just like perfect. It was like, oh my god. These are the Raiders.
You know, in Thor there was the line that Odin had, you know, but you're not. That sort of like stung a little bit. This one, Optimus tells Samuel, "I'm your friend. I'm always your friend." Then Bumblebee comes by and he talks to Sam, and Optimus says, "Make it short." And I'm like, "Ow, that little line just sort of sunk." I'm like, "Ah, that hurt."
So, well, and a brilliant bit right there because, well, not brilliant, but an interesting bit because. One of the, you know, Bumblebee, of course, talking through his radio. The last line of that polls is "your friend."
Yes.
Which is the Spock line.
Yes, I was telling Triplett about that. That's the second Spock reference. The first Spock reference was when Brain and Willie was watching an episode of Star Trek, the original series, and Spock was in it. Then he said, the second of three that I caught.
That's right.
But okay, so the Autobots went up in the rocket. Starscream came down, blew the crap out of it, and we assume they're dead.
We assume they're dead. By this point, we've skipped something though. Something very important thing with Sam that happened.
Which part? Douchebag Dempsey.
The secret kind of organization that is helping, I guess, the Decepticons, it looks
so
like.
Basically, Patrick Dempsey's character is the head of this...
sort of cabal, really.
Yeah, cabal of humans that are sort of aiding the Decepticons. He's doing it against his will, because he inherited this from his father who worked with the Decepticons. Yeah. Decepticons made him
I like how he says that I inherited this client from my dad.
But he made him a very rich person and a very rich family. And you know, even though he inherited this, he still to his end supports the Decepticons. They catch Carly. They basically capture Carly in Soundwave, who's a Mercedes, which is pretty awesome. And
way better than a satellite, by the way.
Yeah, way better than a satellite.
Kind of reminds me of Sean Bagger a little bit.
I don't know if
you guys noticed, but like, okay, so they had the whole reason that Carly ends up like leaving for a little bit. They have a fight because Sam's getting involved in all of this, the alien stuff.
Kind of like
and
me in
she
podcasting.
Doesn't want him to.
It's like me
and
in
it's,
podcast.
It's pretty typical because it's like, you know, she loves him because of like the little bit of danger and stuff that he's talked about.
He's getting way into it.
But she doesn't really want him to be involved in it. And now that he's going to be involved in it again, it upsets her. But in that scene, when she goes out to the car, you can see the headlights with the red eyes moving around.
Yes.
And my wife didn't catch it, but I don't know if some people did. But yeah, you can actually see that it's Soundwave's like eyes or whatever. In the little headlights moving around. But yeah, and from there, when he follows her, is when you catch the whole Dempsey character, and that's when she's captured.
Yeah,
by
she's
him.
Captured. And basically, he has a watch on, and he holds Sam down, and the watch transforms, and then gets on Sam's hand. He's like, you know, we're going to watch you. We're going to find out. We want you to find out from Optimus what his plan to, what they're going to do to try to get out of this, basically, the plan of attack. Yeah. And, basically,
and when Optimus is leaving in the shuttle, he basically says there is no plan.
But
you know, we're leaving.
So at this point, Sam says, "You know, I'm going to kill you." Sam vows to kill him, which is great. So, we go back to the shuttle, and basically, Optimus says, "There's nothing. You know, we can't do a thing. you made this bed. You're going to lie in it."
Right.
So then
Optimus really got pissed in this movie. He was really pissed when he found out about the the, you know, Sentinel and the ship and everything.
He was.
He was like, yeah.
He was, but the trailer made it look to be worse than it was, because once, you know, once they got Sentinel and everything, he was happy again. It's like, oh, I'm great, Sentinel's back. But the movie got really accelerated its pace at this point, because the Autobots went up, it was destroyed, the Decepticons took over Chicago, and it was the most violent stuff we have seen in this movie. Sure,
we see
robots get killed all the time, and it's gruesome. Humans are killed left and right. It's not
gory. I mean, it wasn't
occasionally.
Like,
I mean, we saw
incredibly gross.
We saw the guns being pointed at the humans, and then we saw the humans being obliterated. At one point, we see the gun pointed at the human. The trigger pulled. Yeah. Then the person explodes, and their skull rolls off screen. Yeah. That's pretty gory. God.
Yeah, I mean, but that wasn't. It wasn't like blood and guts. So, and that's maybe what I mean. I think there's a little bit of a line there between.
I honestly don't think there's a line, especially if young children are watching. Yes. I mean, it's scary. Scary.
Yeah,
but
it kind of reminds me a bit of you know, Mars Attacks, when they shoot them and then just turn into a skeleton and fall down, kind of like that.
Yeah, exactly. But
it's,
I think
it's
that
gruesome,
that's
but kind of like, not gruesome.
Right. It's not. It's not. To me, it's not as bad as like if they would have been shot in half, and you know,
you're right. It's not.
You would have had like splatters and things.
So
plenty of that when it's robot on robot.
Exactly. All while this is happening, Sam had met up with Epps in Florida, and basically Epps had decided, hey, I'm going to help you get Carly back, who's in Chicago conveniently. So they're there. There's this little I guess.
Yeah, Epps retired from NEST. He's taking care of the wreckers, I guess, and the bots there at that place.
And all of these former NEST associates go with him to help get Carly out. And they get to Chicago, and they're like, screw this. I'm not going in there. No one's going in there.
Because it was heavily guarded.
Heavily guarded.
I mean, there was no...
Dead and dying people laying everywhere. Everyone is going away from Chicago, and they're going in.
It was World War III.
It's World War III. It was really well done. And, you know, they get there, and they're like, you know, screw it, we're not going in there. And Epps is like, no one's going in there. And Sam's like, I'm going in there. And it's really cool. He gets under attack. This Decepticon ship's flying around. Looks like it's going to kill him, and then the thing gets shot, blows up, and it's Optimus. And then the best line of the film. Well, yeah. It's like, kill them all.
Kill them all.
Yes.
But again, that comes right from Megatron's master plan. It's when Megatron says about, you know, one city's going to fall, then the next, then the others, nothing you can do to stop it, and then the Autobots turn up and start kicking ass.
Yes. G1. Yeah, so we're going to kill them all. Now, the Autobots didn't show up, you know, in time to save Chicago. But they came up. They showed up in time to save Sam. Apparently they said, "Well, screw it. We built that rocket. You know, we were in one of the thrusters that landed in the ocean. We just waited it out."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they explained that, which is funny.
Yeah.
Then lots of crap happens. Probably the most exhilarating scene of the film, and it looked great in the trailer, and it was probably the most exciting part was the stuff with the building that was being tilted over.
Wow.
That was awesome.
Yeah. It was very good.
Well, and it was by this point that the wreckers had showed up, and you actually see them wrecking stuff, which was awesome.
It was great. So that scene was just fantastic. Everything going on. I mean, at this point, you know, the movie, it's the denouement. Everything just sort of falls, and everything resolves itself. There's a lot of fighting.
We find out what the actual point of all of this is, though, because
they're going to bring
a couple of different things. The first thing that we're told is that what the humans are told, what the human assistants are told, is that the humans are going to be turned into a slave race and they're going to take all of our resources. But in reality, they've taken all of the pillars and placed them around the Earth, and they're going to bring Cybertron here.
We've seen this before.
Nice.
Grandmaster Flash.
And
Ultimate Doom Part 2, Ultimate Doom Part 1.
So,
yeah, I mean,
it was awesome. So,
that was such an amazing sight as well.
And, you know, sort of a predictable thing back and forth. Like, well, we deactivate the pillar. Oh, it's activated again. Oh, we're screwed. And then, of course, it gets destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's just a bunch of fighting and killing and stuff in between Optimus. I guess the best part is the humans take down Shockwave, which is pretty neat. There's a neat scene.
And Sam kills
Starscream.
I was
hoping Starscream would survive, but
nope.
There's this neat scene. It's kind of neat scene when who is the Autobot that is the creator of the stuff? Q. That's right, Q.
Yeah,
so there's a scene where Q is
Wheeljack.
Yeah, there's a scene where all the Autobots are being held captive, and they decide, you know, screw it, we're not going to keep prisoners, we're going to get trophies. So
that was cool.
Yeah, gangland style, execute Q, and then they're about to kill Bumblebee. and to the rescue comes Brain and Wheelie, who had commandeered one of the big ships. And sadly, I think it got me. They're flying the ship, and the ship falls into the river. And you know, they're saying, "Well, we're dead." And I was hoping
we're gonna die.
I was hoping at some point they would show up again, but
I thought they'd show up after the credits, but they didn't.
No, so
yeah, I thought there would be a thing where they were crawling out or something. I was like, "Oh man, they killed them off! Holy crap!"
Yeah, that sucks because I really liked them.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it does kind of. I mean, there's some slow points in there, but it really is a lot of like action that builds to that last sequence.
It's really hard to explain it. So watch it. So if you watched it, you know exactly what we're talking about. It would be pointless to really explain all of the stuff that happens. At this point, Optimus and Sentinel are duking it out, and Sentinel is kicking the crap out of Optimus. We see Carly. She finds and speaks to Megatron. Megatron says, "Are you here to surrender?" Which I thought was great.
It was awesome. It was so Megatron.
I love that. And she's like, you know, so you know that you're not going to rule Cybertron. I will rule Cybertron. It's like, no, I will. Yeah. It's like, you know, when it boils down to it, you're just Sentinel's bitch.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
And
here's the brilliant thing. The whole reason that she knows this is because there was an establishing shot where she's watching them.
Yes.
Sentinel and Megatron have the argument. So they even had the established... Like, this movie had a script, people. This movie had a plot and a script.
So, basically, Sentinel is beating the crap out of Optimus. He's cut off his arm. He shoved his sword axe thing into Optimus's shoulder. Looks like Optimus is done for. Nah, Megatron comes up and just completely shoots the crap out of Sentinel. doesn't kill him, but he's mortally wounded. Sentinel was explaining to Optimus why he did it, and of course he said, "Optimus, you need to learn that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of you."
That was like, yeah, that point I cringed because I was like, "Oh,
that pulled
cool.
me out of it.
Why
that pulled me out of it a little bit."
But that's a reference to Spock, but it's quite an obscure reference to Spock.
No, it's not. It is not an obscure reference at all. That is the most blatantly obvious Spock reference you could ever make.
It's not obscure at all.
That is no.
It's obscure. No.
People in the theater laughed. Everyone knew what that was.
True, at least he didn't say "Live long and prosper."
I mean, it's not like he's talking about the edict, or it's not like he's like, you know, "I'm undergoing the Ponfar." You know, it was freaking, you know, referencing Star Trek II, which everyone remembers. So,
yeah, that's
So Optimus is getting the crap kicked out of him. Megatron comes and just annihilates Sentinel. Doesn't kill him. Optimus then, one-armed, beats the living hell out of Megatron.
Oh, but before he does that, I love the line that Megatron gets in, you know, what are you without me?"
He says this to Sentinel.
Optimus says,
"He says that to Sentinel. What are you without me?" And then Optimus is like, "Let's find out." Yeah. And then he just whips his freaking head off.
It was gruesome.
Rips his head off.
But it wasn't until that point I realized that the back. Sort of the helmet of Sentinel looks exactly like Optimus's, just as his face is different.
Different color.
That was quite a nice touch, actually.
Yeah, but so Megatron's dead, probably for for real this time. And then Sentinel's laying there, and he's trying to just talk.
God, so much death in this movie that it seems permanent. I mean, it seems permanent.
And Optimus just executes Sentinel right then and there. Saying you didn't betray, you didn't betray me, Sentinel. You betrayed yourself. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And then the movie ended.
Yeah, pretty much. It was just that was a little odd bit. It was like, really, can we have just a little bit of like a, little bit of a not even a denouement of the denouement. Just a little bit of like, can we have something like a few months later? Can we see that everything's gonna be okay? It was just like,
was there anything after the trailer after the Simmons bit?
No, that was it.
So yeah, it was a good movie. I liked it.
It was good.
I am shocked.
It's my second favorite movie I've seen this year.
I mean, it was fun to watch. It made sense.
It was everything that Green Lantern was not.
it was comprehensible. It made sense.
Yeah. I mean, and even at that, it's like, the difference that a script makes, because then, like, even Carly, like, that end sequence was believable because they had established who she was and, established, and had her do so. I mean, she basically saved the day. Like, that part right there is what saved the day. If it wasn't for that, Sentinel would have killed Prime. And that would have been
She didn't scream Sam every 5 minutes.
No.
And I mean, she didn't end up being like the damsel in distress for most of it, but she totally redeemed it with that line. Like that sequence, she totally understood who Megatron was and played right into his weakness. It was brilliant.
I want to go see this again.
Yeah.
I want to go see it I'm going to go see it Saturday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm as shocked as you are. It was a good movie.
I'll say the first thing that I said as the credits started to roll was F Orisai and Kurtzman.
Yes,
because the first movie it had a few things here and there. It was like, well, it doesn't really have a plot and it's kind of odd, but we'll give it a pass. And then the second film comes along and there's like it's worse. But there was that new guy, this writer, I can't remember his name. But it was like, oh, well, the new guy must have done all of these, terrible jokes.
Is his name Kruger?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's something like that. But then, Orisai and Kurtzman leave, and suddenly the film has, like, a coherent script, and nobody peeing on anybody, and nobody humping anything. Like, ow.
I'm amazed.
Sam's parents would just play it right down this time around as well.
Yeah, Sam's parents didn't get as much play as they have in the past, but it's the same sort of humor, and even though they were downplayed, it was the same sort of thing. Now, I originally thought that Sam's dad was a different actor, but did he gain some weight?
Yeah. I think he gained some weight.
He grew a beard.
Yeah,
he gained some weight. The mom lost some weight. The mom was kind of hot.
I love the book. She comes first.
Oh my god! But it did fit better into that first like film movie. In the first film, she was kind of drunk and starts talking about Sam, masturbating. And then in this one, she just follows like she's talking but not thinking about what she's saying.
Yeah.
And so it's like she gets to the point of being across the line before she's even knows that she's across it. And so like that one joke I gave a pass to because it was like it fit with that character. Characters. This is crazy.
What a concept.
Yeah.
So hey John, I guess we can sort of wrap things up, but tell us what is the chat thought so far about the movie, the people that watched it?
We've had kind of a just an ongoing conversation. I know everybody has essentially had a positive opinion of the movie. So like our talks about the movie kind of as you guys went along. have been positive. So, you know, we're all talking about the parts that we like, and there's some weird things, like, you know, like when Megatron offers a truce and promptly gets, you know, horribly murdered by Optimus Prime, so we're laughing about that. And then, you know, I mean, just, you know, all the other parts of the movie, you know, we're talking about the violence, and we're talking about, you know, some of the sequences that we liked and we didn't like. But overall, everybody is upbeat and happy, and, you know, everybody thinks the movie was awesome. We want to know when and how and where Prime got reunited with his trailer. That was kind of an odd missing out in the movie.
It has the feeling of being a cut scene. Like, yeah, it seems like there's a cut sequence. Yeah.
Like, one that's, like, too noticeable to overlook. But, hey, director's cut, maybe. Something like that.
Yeah.
So, hopefully they can, like, add it as animation or stop animation. Just kind of wedge it in there. It would be awesome.
And there were a couple of, you know, I guess in the most of the Chicago scene, Optimus was wound up in cable.
Yeah, okay. There was a lot of that.
Yeah. So he was left hanging. It was very, the Dark Knight Joker, maybe, something like that. So I don't know. He gets cut down, though, right? Eventually by the Wreckers.
Yeah, the Wreckers show back up. Yeah. And then they were absent at the end, so I don't know where they ended up. But
we talked a little bit about Q and his scene, which was interesting. You know, the POW death. That was interesting. Let's see here. What else? Well, I mean, like, you know, just overall, we really liked the movie. I think everybody liked the movie. Laserbeak was big with the crowd. Everybody liked
Laserbeak.
He's big
in Europe.
Yeah.
He was good. So, yeah, positive. Thumbs up.
Yay. Awesome. Okay. Well, we're not doing anything else this week.
Toy.
Yeah. We're not doing anything. Yeah. We're not doing anything else this week. It's just this. So, next week we'll come back with Twitter Theater, Crave Corner, news and such. But this week we just really wanted to cover Dark of the Moon. So, if you're not following us on Twitter, please do at TF Radio. If you are not following us, are fans of us on Facebook, do that. It's facebook.com/TF Radio. And I guess it's a little late to say, but if you just happen across this on YouTube, looking for Dark of the Moon stuff, we are Radio Free Cybertron, the world's first Transformers internet radio show, or podcast, as the people call them today. We are one of the world's first podcasts. We've been around since 1999. I think we're the second, literally second podcast. I can only find one that came before. So we are pretty. We've been doing this for a while. We're pretty awesome. Brian Kilby,
that's
host.
Pretty awesome.
John DeLuna, Chris Triplett, Tony's here with us this week, and JD
Hello.
Church. So our website is tfradio.net. Go there, visit all of our shows. Femboy Versus, New Soundwave is just coming up. Just here in a minute. It's our video game show. Superhero Time, Outside the Cage, and Bitmap 2099 or 2099 Bitmap. Sorry, and lots of others. So tfradio.net. It's awesome. You know you want to. Please do. So I guess that's it, guys. Thank you for being on again. Tony, thank you for being on this week.
No worries, Paul. It's good to be back.
Fan.
I'm always up for coming back.
Fantastic. We love having you on. So,
and everybody, just remember, kill them all.
Kill them all.
Yes. Kill them all.
That was great. So we will be back next week with a regular show. Thank you for watching.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/TF Radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.